Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
On this week's episode of The Mincing Rascals, they talk about the stop and frisk policy in Chicago and also their predictions of the first presidential debate.
It's Friday, September 23rd, 2016. This is John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, portions of which will be broadcast on my Saturday show at 1:30 on WGN Radio.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the epic columnist for the Tribune.
You know what? I was going to use one. I was actually thinking today in advance of this, Eric, what adjective will I use to describe myself? And I was going to say, I'm the curious John Williams. Curious. I don't think I'm plucky. I don't think I'm epic. But curious is worth something, isn't it?
No, that's really lame. You got to come up with something more dazzling. Maybe.
Like Curious George the Monkey?
Maybe the shoe fits. The first presidential debate is Monday, September 26th. But the fight is already here in Chicago. Candidate Donald Trump says that to stem the city's violence, police should use stop and frisk tactics. This worked wonderfully in New York, he says. And on Fox and Friends, he described the process as, quote, they will stop, they will frisk, and then they will take the gun away, and then they won't have anything to shoot with. It's more complicated than that. But, Kristen, should we give that a try again?
No. I mean, we've actually had, even before we had an official stop and frisk policy, police here have always had the ability to stop and frisk. That's according to Gary McCarthy, the former superintendent. I interviewed him quite at length about this at one point. We take more guns off the street than any other city in America.
Than New York and L.A. combined.
So, no, I don't think stop and frisk is the, maybe it's part of a broader solution, but no, that is not really what saved New York singularly. It's much broader than that.
Yeah, there's a lot of dispute about what the effect was in New York. The ACLU there says that it did not have any impact on crime rates. And, you know, one of the problems we have in the city right now is the relationship between the black community and the police. And if we are officially promoting a policy that says, yeah, we can just grab you and search you for any reason we want, that's not going to improve those relations.
David Axelrod said, I think it was on CNN, that would be like throwing kerosene on fire. So
I guess so, yeah. You know, I want to deal, though, with the pragmatism of it. I wish that we didn't have evidence that it didn't work, because on the surface it does sound like at least it's a good Band-Aid. At least it's something to try, akin to the National Guard, right? They're not going to be there forever, but if it at least stems the tide for a while, that what's so bad about that?
Well,
or does the risk...
Well, go ahead, Eric. What Kristen was saying was that, as far as she understands, and I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the exact letter of the police procedure is, but that they can, if they have any probable cause to search somebody, they can, and they do right now. I mean, yeah. You just can't just stop somebody who's walking down the street and frisk them, but if they have some suspicion, and that's not that hard to gin up, I think.
Well, it's not availed, really, that much call to racial profiling. If you see a few black men walking down the street coming at you and you're a police officer, just say, hey, fellas, how you doing this afternoon? Mind if I pat you down? I really think that's what Donald Trump wants, and I really think plenty of people support that. And evidence to the contrary, again, I was just wondering if that would actually work, if that would catch some guns, keep some bad guys from doing bad things.
No. And I think cops, like Eric is saying, they already do this. If they pull over a driver and they want to search the vehicle, oh, you know what, I think I smell marijuana, so I'm going to search your car. They already have the ability to do a lot of searches and pat downs without having to run to court to get permission. So I think it's kind of a distraction, actually.
Rahm Emanuel did not endorse anything like that, did he, this week, Kristen? He didn't call for that in his 40-minute speech, did he?
No, not at all. No. The only pressure that he kind of put on the community, where he stepped outside of his box a little bit, I thought, the mayor, was acknowledging that, you know, police are here to protect and serve. They're showing up at these scenes, and they're being taunted, and they're being ridiculed, and they're being, you know, they're acting out at police. And so he did call on the community to, you know,
what was the what's your review of that speech? I'd like to hear around the table what you thought about.
I'm always struck by the mayor's emotion. because he's got this hard-ass sort of reputation. And then it's not unusual for him at all when talking about individual people to sort of break down. And he
did twice in that speech.
Yeah, especially the one I saw that struck me was when he was talking about the Chicago police officer whose son was killed and then went back on the job, put the uniform on, and continued to protect us all. He could barely get through it, and he knew it was coming. I mean, he paused as even going into it. I don't know. That sort of strikes me as I try to figure him out.
Well, good speech, bad speech? What do you think?
I don't know what the impact of it's going to be. I mean, I think it's more about the program. I don't think the city is set up for effective speeches. You know, I don't know if we as a body politic pay attention to a speech the way we would to a presidential speech. I also think he's not a very good speaker. He doesn't have a way, you know, he ends up and he doesn't have a very polished way, so it's not effective in that way. I don't think the measure of the speech is that much. I think we'll see what happens with the policy.
Well, yeah, but I also think there's not much he can say. Even if he had the goods and maybe couldn't deliver it, Steve, I don't know what the goods are. I didn't see or hear them in that speech. I mean, you know, if the problem is crime, the solution isn't the National Guard or stop and frisk. It's so gigantic. I felt bad for the mayor. You know, everybody's looking at him like, okay, here's the most important speech of your administration. What have you got? And he didn't have. I didn't hear anything. You know.
I do not feel sorry for him. I'll say that. he gave a much more, I think, timely and gripping speech to city council. Remember that? Not after it finally dawned on him. After it finally, he realized the watershed moment of the Laquan McDonald case. He spoke to city council and acknowledged that there is a problem in the police department and that we need to do something as a city to fix it. That to me felt more authentic. This speech, I'm with Steve. You know, it's words. I wasn't terribly impressed.
But what could the words have been, though? Literally, what could he have said? Well, we need more money. We need to mentor young black men so they don't lose hope. Some of that was in there, and that's true, but fine, you know?
Well, one of the things I thought was very curious about this was that he delayed the speech. He was going to deliver it, was it Tuesday morning or something?
Right,
Tuesday. And he delayed it, which really ramped up the expectations. The other thing that he did was he dribbled out details that were coming out, like the 970 new cops was already known.
He also
leaked something that's saying that he was going to go after black fathers, which he ended up not doing because just that leak provoked a really negative response.
Do you think he delayed it to allow for the announcement of the cops hiring? I can't figure out why it was delayed either.
Charlotte.
You think?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got this huge national story, and not that he was expecting a national spotlight, but I don't know that you want to give this type of a speech when all of that was so raw. But that's just speculation on my part.
You asked, John, what did I want to hear? I was thinking that there was going to be something more than just, you know, we're going to spend. I mean, he says we're going to spend $134 million to hire these new cops, $36 million more over 3 years on mentoring programs. And I don't think anyone around here at this table would think that mentoring programs are a bad idea, but we need a much bigger solution. And I was thinking that there might be something more along the lines of a New Deal or a Marshall Plan to address these chronic set of dystopian conditions in some of these neighborhoods. We didn't hear that. It seemed very incremental to me. I thought it was pretty well delivered. I felt something when he was choked up. I wasn't cynical about it.
You felt something? Did you feel a thrill up your leg?
Okay, so let's go back to New York and stop and frisk, because one of the things he talked about early was this idea, and we've talked about it, of putting gun offenders away for a longer period of time. Isn't that one of the things that has led to success in New York? I mean, can't we point to that?
We can,
And that's what they're fighting for here, or that's what the mayor's calling for.
Here's what I have a problem with: all these little patchwork solutions. We need tougher gun laws. We need this. We're going to mentor. I mean, we spend millions and millions of dollars on after-school programs and job training and all of that already. The bigger problem to me is that we have waited so long to address a systemic problem in these neighborhoods.
Yeah.
When middle-class black families started leaving 10 years ago and emptying out some of these communities, that should have been an alarm bell. Instead, we focus on flowers downtown and riverfront and all of this. And I'm just concerned that some of these areas, unlike New York, are so hollowed out at this point that there's almost no rescuing them. I don't know what you do with an entire section of the city. And I mean ward, maybe ward to ward, where it is house after house after house that are boarded up, businesses that have left. There's nothing left in some of these areas of the city, and we have allowed this to happen as a city. How do you fix that?
Which is why mentoring programs are not going to get the job done. I mean, you really need, and he said that there's like 2,000 jobs that Starbucks CEO is going to help him. But you need probably tens of thousands of jobs, right, or some equivalent number. You need a big economic revitalization, and he's not really talking about that. And that's the only way you're going to really turn these neighborhoods around. And, you know, it's an ambitious lift, especially in a city that's really, really struggling financially.
Yeah, that's why I thought that speech was doomed from the start. That's the solution to crime, not, you know, some sort of policing tactic. But, you know, what's he going to do? Say we need to lift the economy and get these people jobs? Sure. But, I mean, what are you going to do about that, Rahm Emanuel?
Well, he wanted the job. I mean, seriously, some of these politicians.
I know. I was thinking, why did you want this job?
We're
holy
just a bunch
cow.
Of podcasters here. we can criticize, but we didn't say, hey, I've got a solution. Elect me. I'll fix it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not electing to run for mayor, but I will throw this in here that all of these things that the city council and the mayor keep doing, like mandatory raising of minimum wage, mandatory making people take time off of work, rejecting any sort of locally approved prevailing wage ordinance, right to work in certain areas of the city that have not had development in 20 years. Nobody wants to adopt some pro-business reforms in pockets of the city that are falling off the map. Nobody wants to even talk about that in a union-controlled, democratically-controlled city. You want to bring industry back to the southeast side, you're going to have to start looking at some of these alternatives, and no one will do it. No one will talk about it. We're going in the opposite direction. We're making it harder for businesses to open here.
Well, without signing on to every point that Kristen made necessarily, I think I'm signing on with the general idea that these are things that need to be talked about and seriously discussed. I think she's exactly right, that we need to look at a lot of these initiatives for some of these areas and say, how can we turn them around? And we have to set aside our, various partisan or ideological ideas about that and see what might work there. And so I sign on to that idea completely.
Yeah. Let's move on to Charlotte for a second, guys, just because the conversation has some parallels in that they are reticent to release the video. Maybe reticent isn't exactly the right word because that shooting wasn't that long ago, but here we go again with another piece of video that everybody wants to see that might help people come to terms with what happened, might actually stem some of the looting or the rioting or the violence.
The mayor said this morning, and she said the police chief agrees with her, that the video will be released.
Yeah, well, sure,
it's just a
Steve.
Matter of timing.
Well, so the Laquan McDonald video was eventually released, too.
I don't think it's going to be a year.
There's a law going into effect October 1st in North Carolina that prevents forever, I think, the release of these dash cam videos and body camera videos. So maybe they're just trying to run out the clock until October 1st.
Do you think they would do that?
Would they ever do anything that cynical? I don't know. But,
what is the problem with releasing the video? Can somebody explain that to me?
I mean, I'm not going to defend not releasing the video, but look what happened here in Chicago when they released the Laquan McDonald video. I mean, Mayor Emanuel last night said that the Laquan McDonald case was what really caused a change. It wasn't the Laquan McDonald shooting that caused the problem. That had happened more than a year ago. What caused all the problem was the release of the video. And so it does upset people, and you can imagine that if they release this video in Charlotte, I'm guessing that it's not a pretty video.
The mayor says it's an ambiguous video, that it doesn't clearly show.
Yeah, but that's okay too. Then that will at least end the argument that they're hiding something, wouldn't it, Steve?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you've got people in the city protesting saying he was holding a book.
Well, I mean, if the video is ambiguous,
it doesn't show him clearly holding or pointing a gun.
Okay, but then they can't say that the cops are hiding video that makes the cops look bad.
Transparency is always best.
I don't think it's unreasonable, though, that we give them a few more days. I mean, even with all the changes here and the case we had of the kid who stole the car and rammed into the police, we did see that video maybe 7 or 10 days after the incident occurred. But there is a point of, they are evidence gathering at this point. They're going to be looking at whether this officer was justified or not. It's not unreasonable to me that they're not just releasing it, immediately. I think it's okay for them to sit on it for a while until they decide what to do.
Yeah. I've actually imagined a scenario, Kristen, where you appoint some sort of ombudsman from the black community or the city or whoever's, upset, right? And you say, okay, we're going to show you the video. We can't release it all and we can't give you a copy of it, but we want you to at least vouch for our contention that the video is ambiguous, that it doesn't at least show that the police were, shooting a man just holding a book. watch, and then they go into the room and they watch the video, and then they come out and they go, you know what, everybody, he didn't have a book, he had a gun, and we're not going to release the video because there's other people we got to track down in the video, and that's evidence and blah blah blah. But it just seems to me like people don't trust the police. They think that there's something on the video. This happened in Minneapolis. This happened in Chicago. This happens all the time. And you've just got to find some way to, if you can't release the video, at least convince people that you're not hiding something. No, that's my thought. Did you guys see the video of Hillary Clinton on Zach Galifianakis's Between Two Ferns?
Yes.
Did you see
it,
Kristen?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I retweeted it.
Yeah, I've posted it myself. I was a little surprised by that. I thought it was really funny. I also thought it was risky. Here's the candidate who hasn't done a, you know, certified press conference in how long?
Oh, no, that's over. That's an old accusation.
Oh, no. Wait, are you counting the one on her campaign plane as a press conference?
No, she's given a few, and the candidate who doesn't give news conferences is the Republican candidate. He only appears on Fox.
Okay, well, truth be damned, the attitude about Hillary Clinton is that she's not honest, transparent enough, and doesn't do enough press conferences. But she'll do a scripted Galifianakis thing on Funny or Die, and I thought, okay, that it was really funny. It was really good. It was self, and it was deprecating. It was, you know, it was hard on her and Donald Trump. But I thought that when you consider the language and when you consider, you know, that backdrop, I thought, wow, that's kind of risky. Steve, what did you think of
it? Well, first of all, I think she is making herself available every 3 or 4 days now. I mean, I think so. That part of the criticism, I think, is gone. I thought it was funny. There were a couple language issues that might have offended people who aren't going to watch it anyway. I thought she was fine, but he was very funny. You know, the idea of how do we get a hold of you? Email? That's a very funny line. You know, and clearly she had to have some sort of approval of it all. You know, so she approved that line too. I don't know. I think, I don't know if it's going to get her any more votes. It might build support with younger people, which is where she needs the support. So I thought it was a good move.
Do we know how scripted those are? I know Obama did one 4 years ago.
I think it's totally scripted.
It has to be. She would never have signed off on anything that wasn't where they knew exact. I thought you could even tell while you were watching it where there were cuts.
Cuts, yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure she knew everything. But I think it was a direct appeal to millennials. That is where she is suffering the most. And I think she's done well on Kimmel and these other shows when she loosens up a little bit. And so I think that it was a very nothing they do is not calculated. So this was an appeal to younger voters. I mean, much younger than me. When somebody brought this to my attention, I said, who? What show? Who's that guy? The Hangover? What's that?
The internet? I mean, what is that?
I know. I'm revealing myself as an 80-year-old man today, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You didn't think it was funny, John? You didn't like it?
I did. Oh, I absolutely did. But I just think that the stakes are so high. And I saw it as a little risky. And I thought, oh, man, you know. And the day that I saw it was the day yesterday that at least one poll had her up 5 points.
Well, maybe you're thinking like the old Clinton campaign then, and you're so afraid to do anything, to risk anything, that you end up, you know, being passed by in the foxhole.
You mean her first campaign against Barack Obama?
The campaign up until the wobble, or, you know, until
right.
You know, where you're so cautious, you don't do anything, and it ends up costing you. Eric, did you weigh in? What do you think?
I mean, I thought it was amusing. It's one of the things where it's uncomfortable.
It was really funny. It was amusing. It was hilarious. It was really, and it was pointed.
Eric, you're no longer entitled to your opinion.
Yeah, go ahead, Eric. Go back with the amusing thing.
I'm
sorry.
I mean, I watched it once.
I can't believe you're nonplussed by this. But
no,
go ahead.
I'm not nonplussed, but I watched it. I thought, no, that's kind of funny, but I didn't think, like, well, that's going to seal the deal with millennials. Interesting. So the debate.
Mm-hmm.
What are we looking for?
I think that I read in the New York Times today, or the New Yorker, the latest issue of the New Yorker, somebody said that debates like these are more often lost than won, right? So Hillary needs to be careful not to, you know, do something that's going to injure herself. And I don't know if Trump even has that bone in his body, but that here again, I want Hillary to win the debate. I want her to win the election. So I'm thinking, okay, don't screw up. And that's probably the recipe for screwing up. So that's at least that's my concern for her going in.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there predicting 100 million viewers of this. So pressure's on for both of them just to not slip up, to not say something that becomes, you know, the lead story and all of the rest, if there is substance, gets lost. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. He has to look competent and capable, and she has to make him look incompetent and incapable. And if she can do that, I think this will be a pivotal moment for a lot of people who are on the fence.
This is where we are now, is you can only lose these things. You can only lose, and you can only say something wrong in a campaign. You can only misspeak at a news conference. You can only lose anywhere. And so I think that's what this debate will be about, too. Who's more afraid of losing? She is. And I think, you know, she's more timid, more, you know, calculated, guarded, which I just think it's fraught with peril for her Monday night.
One of her people said this week, Steve, that they're afraid that the bar will be lower on the questions for Donald Trump since, you know, she's been a Secretary of State. There's a certain competence you'll expect her to have. She'll get asked harder, more detailed questions where Donald Trump will get kind of softballs and then we'll just all, you know, the next day weigh what he said. They want as pointed questions at Trump as they think Hillary Clinton's going to get.
First of all, I wanted to put in a plug for this debate watching party that Kristen and I are going to be joining with Darlene Glanton. We're going to be watching it with readers and listeners, I hope, over at the Witt Hotel. And if you go to chicagotribune.com/debate night, you can come and join us and watch and
plug.
Plug. Anyway,
I thought we did those at the end of the podcast.
No, so radio. You guys
I'm
going to
do it at the end.
No,
we're going to really jam up the.
We stick them in, you know, so that people can't fast forward over them. So
it's going to be epic. See, I used epic.
I know, right?
Thank
had
you
to
very
use
much.
Epic, Eric.
Thank you so much. I think I believe that we have two. We have there's sort of two issues these candidates have to overcome. Hillary Clinton has the honest and trustworthy thing, and you know I've got my opinions about this, but you look at the polls that came out this week. Donald Trump is 10 points ahead of her on honest and trustworthy. She has to bring her honest and trustworthy numbers up. I don't know how you do that during a debate. His problem is that people see him as temperamentally unfit to be president. And I think that that is a much easier bar to clear in a debate. If he can manage to keep control of his rhetoric, keep control of his anger, and look a little bit statesmanlike for 90 minutes and not insult her in a way that's considered over the line— I mean, if he shows some restraint, I think the debate is his to lose.
Yeah, I do too. And go ahead.
No, that's it. I mean, I think that, and it's not a question of the bar. It's just they're going over different hurdles.
And the point is about the questions, John, that you bring up. The questions the questions only matter to one candidate. Hillary Clinton will try to answer the questions or try to obfuscate the questions. Donald Trump won't hear the questions. You know, he will only respond and say what he wants to do. I don't think he feels an obligation to actually answer to things. So I just think that that's going to work to his benefit as well.
Yeah, I mean, aren't you most nervous for Lester Holt in this whole situation?
You know, he doesn't want to be Matt Lauer.
Well, and also we've kind of gone through Benghazi and the email scandal and all that. Are we really going to spend all this time trying to pin her on that? Or are we going to get a better sense of how these two people would be as president? So I think there's a lot of pressure on him to reveal the two of them without getting us sidetracked in the weeds on issues that have already been out there.
So I heard something this morning that makes a lot of sense. I can't remember, it was someone on MSNBC, but about how she can score against him, get under his skin or whatever. And there's this whole debate about should the moderator be a fact checker, which I'd love to talk about. But this person said what Hillary Clinton should do is when Trump says something that is clearly wrong, she should engage the audience, look at the camera and say, all right, everyone out there, in other words, Google that right now. Search that and you tell me what you find. And that's a way to engage the audience and to actively make them participate in a falsehood from Donald Trump. I think that could really work rather than rely on Lester Holt or, you know, if she's got these honesty issues, which I don't completely understand compared to Donald Trump, if she's the one correcting him, it's not going to matter as much. You know, she says that's not true, Donald. If people don't believe her, they're not going to believe her when she says that.
Hillary's always been the smartest kid in the class, right? I mean, she's not going to blow some answer with some factual, you know, thing like she's going to get like Poland isn't
right under the influence of
Russia. I mean, she's not going to make a mistake like that. She may come off as charmless and robotic or whatever. However, but you know, there are going to be these moments of engagement, and it's going to be a real test. And
I wonder if she should bait him.
like I say, she's going to try. But I think that if Trump keeps his cool, and we see that Donald Trump that we saw on stage in Mexico, do you remember that, after that meeting with the Mexican president?
Yeah, sure. Or his convention speech at the RNC.
Almost sedated in that, not the convention speech, but almost sedated in that conversation where he was like...
Oh, pardon me, Eric. I'm thinking about then after he went to Mexico and gave the speech in Phoenix and whipped that crowd into a froth.
He was on fire. He's not going to do that. I don't think he's going to do that.
And that's and we saw a version of that. That was a scripted speech he gave from a teleprompter on the night of the Republican National Committee. And he famously doesn't want to be put in a quote-unquote presidential box. So I'm sure he wants to, you know, fight with fire here. But if I had to guess, if I was handicapping it, I'd say no, he'll take the advice of his kids and sort of turn the rhetoric down. What do you guys think happens then? So he does that presidential speech style, and Hillary's competent on the issues, but neither of them sort of engages. Neither of them, you know,
so
makes
it's
a big
push.
Mistake. It's a push. Then how do you score that, Steve?
I think Hillary Clinton, even though the numbers aren't always in her favor, I want to believe that they've got the organization on the ground that the Republicans and Donald Trump doesn't, that they've got the demographics that the Republicans don't have the benefit of, you know, that she is still in the front of the pack. She's still leading the situation. But I like I said last week, I think anything is possible now.
Maybe she looks at him at some point and just addresses him directly, and she calls him Donald. She says, Donald, tell the American people, or so you're saying that. You know, I wonder if she just literally walks an issue up to him that he's obfuscating on. And I wonder what that would be. I'll bet in the back of their pocket they have some strategy like that that she'll whip out at some point. But but you know, what if he hits it out of the park? What if he then has a zinger ready for that and makes her regret that she asked? You know, that's the danger.
Well, you know that the Clinton team has been gaming this out in every possible way, and Trump is not. Trump is not preparing. Famously, he's off doing rallies and stuff. He's relying, as he's relied all along, on the force of his personality. This is about his attitude and his personality, and I think he has ridden that horse this far. He's going to keep riding it. The question is what personality are we going to see from him? Are we going to see someone who is more of a statesman, or are we going to see someone who is more of a talk radio host?
I think the Hillary lovers who think that he's going to just implode on this, you know, wait till the debate, I think they're wrong. I don't think he's going to face a disaster on Monday. I just don't.
I think he's going to stumble, though. I'll just put that out there now. I think there are going to be some gotcha questions where he comes across as being very ill-prepared. Do you remember earlier?
Gotcha questions are specific hard questions.
Well, both. Okay. Do you remember he did an interview
with the same thing.
His name is escaping me, but CNN analyst who is an expert in foreign affairs, and he just
Fareed
asked
Fareed Zakaria?
Was that it? There was some interview where he absolutely did not know what the answers were, and he fell back on that, I'll have people around me who will know the answers. I do think he will stumble on some of that, because if they don't ask him some questions like that, I think it will be a failure of the debate.
And that will be seen as a gotcha question, though, if they pull out the name of some leader and some issue and he stumbles on that.
No, that's not a gotcha question. A gotcha question would be saying, name the leader of Azerbaijan, and how old is his daughter? That's a gotcha question.
Who's Becky's dad?
Yeah. But a question about, you know, what do you think about the leader of Uzbekistan's move toward, you know, Chechnya or something? That's not a gotcha question. He's supposed to know that. She's supposed to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if he doesn't, though, we are supposed to care. That's the thing, Steve. You said, well, I want everybody to Google the answers, and I think they'll find out that he was lying. Say it goes that way. Hillary calls him out. I'm wondering how damaging that will really be to Donald Trump. I mean, you were the one that just about lost your mind last week about how he says things that aren't always true.
Yeah, I know. And you said about, maybe it was Eric said, I think, or Kristen, about the question, it was one of you, about the questions for the debate should be going forward. I think that's absolutely true, except I want him to answer a lot of questions about his foundation, because he hasn't had to do that yet. And look, this is another instance of that, where she's been on the defensive about her foundation forever. Nothing's been proven. And with his, it looks pretty clear that things have been proven. They've paid fines. They've done wrong, and he has not answered questions about that yet.
If that question is not part of the debate, again, another failure to me. Because, yes, the Post has done all this reporting for the past, week?
Yeah.
And he has not had to address it yet. So,
let's finish with our recommendations of the week. Oh, by the way, so guys, who wins? Eric, score in advance the debate. You know, I don't know exactly how you want to do that, but give me your prediction.
Well, if I had to, you know, write the headline for Tuesday morning, it would be, you know, Trump keeps his cool and impresses Republican voters who are on the fence that he's a plausible president.
Headline is Hillary Clinton shows she's equipped to be president. Donald Trump doesn't and picks up 2 points.
How about you, Kay?
I would say it's Donald Trump proves once again he's Teflon. He'll say something ridiculous and it won't impact him.
Yeah. I think 100 million people are going to be bored with, you know.
So it's 100 million. That's like two of our
Super
audiences.
Bowl. Yeah.
Right?
All right, Steve, what's your recommendation of the week? Something you're watching, reading, listening to, or consuming? What's your recommendation?
I've got nothing, so I'm going to recommend This Is Us, this new drama on network TV. I think it's on NBC. My wife loves it. Have you seen it?
I have. Yeah. I was going to talk about that. I'll go next. So that's my recommendation.
Oh, I did a good one.
Well, the thing that surprises me is the trailers look so 30-something. The trailers for that, you know, the ads that they run in advance are so almost saccharine to me. You know, the music swells with every scene, and then there's somebody saying something touchy-feely, and I'm like, oh, please. I watched the first episode, and it was much better than I thought it was going to be. It was kind of fun.
I loved 30-something. I loved
did
it.
You really?
I was only 20-something when it was on, but I loved it.
I think more of that show. What was the California Family show with just finished with the guy who played Coach in it, you know, and Dex?
Parenthood?
Shepherd. Parenthood.
Oh, Parenthood.
Right? I thought this was like they're trying to be the new Parenthood. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you, Kristen.
Sort of has
Decker.
That feel. Kristen Decker, our producer, chiming in. Okay, so who's left then? Who else
Eric,
has a
Hugo,
recommendation?
What's your recommendation besides our debate? Ding.
Our debate, which I've already promoted. There's a kind of a cool new website called PutinTrump.org. And basically it looks at Trump's views of NATO and Russia, and our mission statement here says, Trump's repeated views go against 70 years of bipartisan foreign policy consensus. We want to raise questions about Trump's policy pronouncements and provide answers for the vast number of American voters we believe share our national security concerns. It's PutinTrump.org.
I like the banana slicer website you sent us to last
week. I was
going to
say, that's
there.
Really interesting. You see Jimmy Fallon when he roughed his hair? That's what people are looking at.
I know. Pardon, Eric. That's a wonderful idea. Thank you.
Don't ever patronize me, John.
And Kristen, do you have one for us?
Anything more exciting than mine?
I had something much more intellectual. Oh, here it is. Okay. There is an interview that is on this website called upstream-ideas.com. From the American Islamic Forum for Democracy founder. And he is a moderate Muslim who makes a lot of sense of what is happening in our country and the way Muslims are being treated. But he is a little more right-leaning in saying that we as a country are being a little too soft on what we should be acknowledging, which is reality, of what radical Islam is capable of doing. It's worth a listen. So go to that website.
What's the site again?
It is upstream-ideas.com.
I'll listen to that, but what are you guys doing Monday?
Substance. This is substance. See, Kristen and I bring substance.
I know,
you guys want to talk about some network TV show.
You're so newspaper.
If you want to drink and watch the debate with some pretty smart people, then make sure you're at the Witt Hotel Monday night, September 26th, for the first Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump debate. That's a Tribune production, right, Eric? You'll be one of the hosts of that.
Yes.
And details are at Tribune.com. Then Kristen is there. And then
Darlene Glanton
is going to be there as well. We will. That wraps up this edition of The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. Thank you, Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie and Kristen Decker, our producer, and Steve Bertrand. The engineer is Bob Ferguson. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNplus.com. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! Little rascal, you!